Monster.
It's Wine. And this podcast may not be suitable for all ages.
The opinions we have in our podcast aren't necessarily the same of those of the Comic Bastards.
So blame us if things get too saucy.
Or too awesome.
Let's go!
Hello, everyone. That's the energy you're getting from me this week. I'm just kidding. It's Monster.
It's Wine.
And we're here. It's the two of us, per usual. Nothing has changed. Get off my back. But I think we have some content for today. I've got my notes, per usual.
Ooh.
Usually, there's a nice cool breeze coming through the window, so it's not going to be a sweaty podcast. That happens sometimes. It's very hot in this chamber. So, yeah, I'm feeling prepared is what I'm trying to tell you.
Oh, that's good, because I'm not.
That's why this works with two. Could you imagine just one of us, just the single individual podcast?
Cool.
Just the monster cast or the wine cast. You'd have to really be on it to have content every week.
Yeah. No, it would just be me be rambling. Just a train of thought weird. It would be such a weird podcast. It would not be popular.
Stream of consciousness.
Yeah, it would not be popular.
Yeah, and with acid heads, though, they'd love it.
Yeah, they would be like, what?
You know, as I like to tell people at the start of the show, this is going to be a solid hour. Don't expect more. If you do get more, consider yourself lucky.
Just be grateful.
Yeah, because sometimes that does happen. We'll be like, ooh, we've tipped over 15 minutes or so. But we'll let them have it. Give a dog a bone. So let me consult my notes in digital format, even
what?
Though I do like paper to pen or pen to paper, as it were. Since you brought it up before we hit record, let's talk a little Muzak, shall we?
Yes, let's do.
And we'll do that because there's a couple of new albums that are out, one of which you had to inform me of because they caught me sleeping, quite frankly. And
I was a little bit mad.
Well, it's weird because, okay, let's just say we're talking about the new Paramore album. It's called After Laughter. And, you know, I was on that single, and I sent you the link for it, Hard
you
Times.
You told me about the single. You've always been... I only know Paramore really because of you, because I wasn't into their when they first came on the scene.
Emo punk sound.
Yeah, I was just like, it's okay, but that wasn't my wheelhouse, and so I dismissed them.
Needless to say, this is a band that has evolved over time
into a direction this girl likes,
and into a direction that I don't hate. There have been bands that I've loved from the get-go and have evolved into a unrecognizable beast.
Yes, well documented on the Monster Wine Hour.
Yes, that is true. Thrice. What? I had to get that out of my throat.
We all have those bands who we love and will still listen, but only to their earlier things. Everybody has a cutoff point. And it's like, oh, I'll listen to this band, but only this, this, and this.
You know, the angel on my shoulder told me to let it go, but the devil's waiting here. And I got to talk about Thrice for a second.
Oh, here this, we go.
This fucking band. But this is a... Okay, look, Thrice, I have a history with loving their music. They put out their Elements album. They're, you know, the fire, disc, earth, wind, water, whatever. I thought, you know, even this is okay. It's got, the concept was so interesting. It was downright admirable. I was just like, look what they're doing here.
These boys.
Then the album after that, I was like, I don't know what this band is. And I, wait, Faye, look, if you hear typing, that's because I'm going to get into this.
Oh, is the captain getting out his cape?
Yes. Da, 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 da. The Alchemy Index was the album that the last album that I thought was pretty darn interesting. Then they put out Beggars, and I was like, what is this band? Listen to it maybe once. Then they put out Major Minor. What is this shit? But again, like that beaten wife I talked about in last week's episode with M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong, I was like that way with Thrice. I said, I'm going to give these new albums a spin because I can't help it. I know he loves me.
Well, was there ever anything on the albums that you said were total shit? Where was mm-hmm. Was there even one song or one chorus where you were like, the band is still there?
Oh, sure. There were flashes.
It's the flashes that bring you back.
It's the flashes of that brother I once knew, but I no longer recognize that face.
That's what war does.
But it has the opposite effect on me. It does not pull me back in. It makes me more angry. Because I'm like, I feel like I've got this gaping wound, and that is the salt that they're rubbing into it. They're like, oh, remember when we were like this, you son of a bitch? And then there's Lemon in my cut.
Wow, you take it really personal.
I do. I can't help it. It is a weakness, I admit. Major, minor, I was like, all right, I'll listen to this. Garbage. Then they went on a hiatus, and I was like, good, fuck off, quite frankly. And that was in 2011, 2012. Then they came back in 2015. They put out an album recently called, this pretentious title, To Be Everywhere is to Be Nowhere. Mm-hmm. So I listened to that, of course, with very low expectations, expecting nothing. And guess what? That's what I got. So I thought, all right, you're back, but you're still that band that I hate. That's fine. I get it. I don't hate you. You'll always have a special place in my heart for four albums or so, but I don't like what you've become. And then I watched recently, as in 2 days ago, I watched this video put out by Ernie Ball.
Guitar picks?
Indeed. Strings, picks, what have ye. With Dustin Kinsrew, the singer/guitar player of Thrice. And I was like, let's see what makes this son of a bitch tick. And he's talking. And he's a very introverted, shy fella, so, you know, you almost need subtitles watching.
I have a question. Sure. I'm sorry. When you're watching this, I picture it was on a laptop. You were scooted back in your chair, elbows on knees, hand with a single hand up to the mouth, leaning in to be like, what is this motherfucker up to? What is in your head?
It was more like Fat Cat in a chair that leans back, and I got my fingers crossed with my legs crossed too, and I'm looking at him like he's interviewing for a position at my company, and I'm like, impress me, son of a bitch.
Okay.
It was very judgmental.
Nice.
And quite frankly, he looks like a truck driver now. Not that there's anything wrong with that profession. God knows. Trucks are the backbone of this nation. They get our supplies, and there's nothing wrong with it. But he looks like a truck driver now. And he says this line that made me want to do that move that you like so much where you flip the table and just kind of storm out of the room.
Oh, I love the temper tantrum.
You know, we come from punk rock, and it's where we got our start, punk rock and hardcore. And at this point, I'm triggered. Because I'm like, what are you going to say next? You son of a bitch.
You are like, tread lightly, my friend. Tread very lightly.
Very much so, because right now I'm like, you should be playing with like Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And then he's like, well, I like to think that we still have those elements of punk rock in us. And I'm like, at this point, I'm getting dizzy. I got like vertigo. Because I got like the blood, it's up in my temples now. You know, there's pressure. I'm like, what are you saying? And he's like, it's still very much in the way we compose our music and DIY style that we go about things and stuff. And I was like, you're lucky this is near the end of the video, Dustin. I made it this far. You son of a bitch.
But
all right.
He said, that was my... But honestly, though, to his credit, he said he would like to think.
Yeah, I don't begrudge him that. In his head, he still thinks he's got that punk ethos in him, and that's fine.
Because it's what made him. It's what molded him.
Right. But you know what a fucking maniac I am.
I know. I know that that set you off. That was one of your triggers.
It's a trigger. Whenever a band that has punk and hardcore roots becomes this abomination that I can't even comprehend with my peepers or my ears, then they still talk about how punk they are, but in a different way.
They got older. I know, but they just got older.
I think we covered this about a month ago with AFI.
Yeah, it's the same thing. This guy would like to think, but in his heart of hearts, he knows how fans like you think. So that's why he said, I would like to think. Because he knows that there are just fans out there that are just going to go 0 to 60 and can't not fucking believe it. But to him,
I'm a lunatic. He always needs that.
He always needs that part. He always needs to know that. Because without that, he's Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And that scares the shit out of him.
Quite frankly, every strum of his new guitar, there's granola and cranberries flying from it. I'm just like, what is this sound?
You know what, though?
Tie-dye flying everywhere.
You know what that sound is? That sound is money.
Yeah, he's man Lilith Fair. But anyway, we got sidetracked because I'm a lunatic. So, Paramore have a new album out, right? Called After Laughter.
Right.
It is their first release since 2013. I didn't realize it had been that long.
Yeah. Me neither.
And that was when they put out Three. The aptly named three-member band. Mm. This is the first album since 2003, and it is the return of their original drummer, Zach Farrow. Because the band was originally Haley, Zach, and that other Farrow brother. His name I can't recall at the moment, but the Farrow brothers. One was on guitar and background vocals and stuff. Josh Farrow. And yeah, I don't know. Like, really diehard Paramore fans are making a stink about it. They're very thrilled that he's back.
Wonder how that's going to go over.
And apparently they have settled with Jeremy Davis, their bass player that left before the release of this album due to, you know, what else breaks up families and friends better than money?
I'll have to listen to it again. Did he play on this album?
That's a good question.
Because
After Laughter...
I'm not super well versed in their early years. Like anything before that Butterfly album, you know, with the cover.
Yeah, Something Eyes.
Yeah, that's when I kind of started knowing about them. Before that, like I know they had like their songs that were on the radio or whatever. That's about it. I would think though, again, who knows? But just as a basis, the sound that they moved to now, I would think would be way more fun to play as a bassist compared to what they were doing before.
From what I'm seeing here, Josh is not His name's not Josh. What did I just say his fucking name was?
I don't know. I'm
whatever. The former bass player. He is not on this album. It looks like one of the producers, co-producers.
Then that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, he was a studio musician. Justin Meldal Johnson. Who is this fuck? Let me look him up. He's one of those bass players that have like recorded with tons of artists and played with tons of artists.
A session musician.
Yeah, Garbage, Dixie Chicks, Tori Amos, Nine Inch Nails, Jimmy Eat World, Paramore, Tegan and Sarah.
He's made a nice living.
Naked and Famous, School of Seven Bells, Neon Trees.
He's like the go-to. He's the go-to pop bassist.
Beck, M83, Air, yeah. So, he's very proficient. So, I gave this album a full listen to today. We should point out that the first single, Hard Times, was like, holy shit, the 80s are back, right?
Yeah.
Both in kind of the vibe and the feel of the song, but also the video, which was obviously intentional. The cover of the album, if you haven't seen it, is very 80s inspired. It's
the sound.
Yeah. I listened. Okay. Let me just give my quick thoughts on their last album, Three. I thought Three was one of those albums which obviously propelled them into a different level of fame. After Brand New Eyes, it had like these huge singles. Now, Still Into You.
Oh, which was that song.
One of the biggest songs you can imagine at the time.
It had huge hits.
Oh, sorry. It had hits, but my problem with the album was like it was either hits or forgettable songs.
Yeah, I don't know any of the other songs. I remember not hating them, but I just don't. Remember.
I mean, for Christ's sake, it had Ain't It Fun.
Oh, I love that song.
I mean, huge, huge, catchy singles. And then it was half and half. It was like half catchy, super songs, and then half super filler. And it was 17 tracks.
That was too long.
Yeah, and I was just like, it's a very inconsistent album. So that's how I remember it. But those singles, the power of those singles projected them into like, I mean, for Christ's sake, they're playing Good Morning America's summer concert series. Like they're on a whole nother level, right?
And it's those songs that to me, I was like, wow, this is what this band is capable of. I'm very intrigued about where this is going.
So we get to After Laughter. They released Hard Times on April 19th. Hard Times. Really good song. Very unexpected. What to expect anymore from Paramore at this point, because I felt like like I said, album three was just so odd and imbalanced, so I didn't really know what to expect. But this was different. It felt different to me. And at first, it was so different that I didn't know if I liked it. Like, I thought, it didn't instantly catch me. It's instantly catchy.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't grab me instantly.
It grabbed me instantly, but I instantly compared it to the monster hits from before. And I was like, well, this isn't up there with those. But I hear that they still know how to make a nice, catchy chorus, as you said.
Yeah.
So I was very, very intrigued.
Then they released their second single, Told You So, on May 3rd, which I only listened to once. But, you know, I didn't hate it. I was like, all right, this is kind of catchy. The video is kind of fun. And that was the only time I heard it, was watching the video the one time. And I was like, oh, that's all right. what I didn't expect was the album that to come out like 1 week after I saw that video. So that's why I couldn't tell you, because I was kind of taken aback by how fast it came out after the second single was released.
Yeah, well, I wonder if, because I didn't remember, I didn't love the second single, but it had enough of what I do like for me to still be excited. I was just really excited because I had a feeling, you know, when there's an album and you just know they release a single and you're like, I know that I'm going to like at least two songs better than the single.
Well, I give the whole album a listen today, right? Mm-hmm. And my initial feeling was that I actually really liked it. Wow. And I was surprised because I thought it would just be like a couple of good songs. I thought it would be a lot like three. And this album felt like a really coherent piece, if I may sound like a pretentious douche for a second.
Douche away.
It was a very solid 12 tracks. I mean, the 11th track is not, it's not her singing at all. It's just music and spoken word over it from the vocalist of Me Without You.
Really?
Yeah, it's just him doing his thing over Paramore's music.
Isn't that the... Oh, all right.
So it's an interesting track, but it's... naturally, it feels like the only track that feels out of place.
Well, yeah, because if I wanted Me Without You guys speaking spoken word over music, I would be listening, I assume, to Me Without You.
Yeah, if you heard that track isolated by, you know, just put it on in the car or something, you would not know that it was at all related to Paramore.
You know what? I got a theory on this.
Uh-huh.
Now, like, I don't know. People probably don't know, like, the history of the band, but it's Strife with Drama, which basically they have this lead singer, Haley, and she's, you know, been in the business since she was, like, 16 or something, right?
Yeah.
And they've always, because she's a good-looking kid and she has a really good voice, they've always... it's the same thing that happened with No Doubt and Gwen Stefani. They always put her to the forefront. She's the one that signed the deal, like no one else is. Basically, like, Paramore is her. Like, if the guitarist can leave, the drummer can leave, everyone can leave, anyone can come back and is interchangeable. If she were to leave, they couldn't go on tour as Paramore.
Right. It's not the same as if they left. They lost their guitar player and drummer, which they did. Paramore still went on and, quite frankly, flourished.
Right, but that's always sort of been a contention. And I think that that's based on, like, interviews and stuff that I've read. I feel like that's something that, for whatever reason, really kind of sticks in her craw. And that she really goes out of her way to be like, no, this is a band. Look at everything the band does. I can understand
why it does stick in her craw.
So I think that then by this other guy coming on and singing over the music, that's supposed to be kind of a, no, this is Paramore because the band's playing. I'm just not doing it. Which I'm like, but.
Yeah, but I think it's her right to feel that way if she does in fact feel that way.
I understand that. I completely get that.
This is interesting. I've got some information here on that track. The moody and marauding 11th track No Friend is the first Paramore song to not feature Williams on vocals. Instead, Aaron Weiss of Me Without You is on the vocals, delivering a spoken word monologue buried in the cacophony of York and Pharaoh's dark inversion of the Idol Worship riff, which is a track that's like before that, like one or two songs before that. The lyrics add metrical detail to the sentiments of Idol Worship, a song about interpersonal expectations and the vast distance between one's self-conception and the idea of oneself that exists in the minds of others. Billboard and Sputnik Music said it is, quote, easily the strangest song that's ever made it to a Paramore album. There you have it.
Yeah.
See? It is very weird. And I don't know. Okay, yeah, it's weird to be even called the Paramore song, but I feel like it's even weirder mixed in with this collection of songs.
But it makes total sense for the overall arc of what I think of what the album is about and what she's kind of thinking and like wanting to do.
Yeah. And that's cool. That's her prerogative. And obviously, ladies and gentlemen, we are just projecting.
Yeah.
There might be people screaming at their audio players right now. You sons of bitches don't know anything.
It's interesting to me because I've been listening to this podcast called You Must Remember This. And it's a fantastic podcast, but I just have it on my brain because it's one of those things that all day long I've been listening to it while I've been at work. And it's old kind of forgotten stories about Hollywood from the complete 1900s, so 1900 to 2000, and it's these different little known stories about it, and they're really interesting, but there's such a common thread between these actresses and actors and their stories, and I just see, especially the ones like Elizabeth Taylor and Judy Garland, like all of the actresses who became super famous when they were young, and then just all the different arcs and stuff that their life goes through in dealing with it, and you just come away so, at least me, I come away so convinced that I'm like, that kind of fame when you're that young, especially for a girl, has got to just super mess you up.
Yeah, it's because it's not quote unquote normal in any way, and there's probably nobody around her that can make her feel like that's normal.
And every, like, yeah,
this is what we do.
Because all of her experiences, like think of all the experiences we've had from 15 to now. Like all of the mistakes that we've made and all of the things that we've learned, we've done it in privacy, basically. I mean, people will know about it, but it's not like the entire world knowing about it. And then we also don't have just thousands of people commenting about everything that we do.
Right.
Whew, man, it's gotta pull a number.
In description of the album title called After Laughter, Haley said that After Laughter is about the look on people's faces when they're done laughing. If you watch somebody long enough, there's always this look that comes across their face when they're done smiling. And I always find it fascinating to wonder what it is that brought them back to reality.
Oh.
So that's what After Laughter is.
We've got a deep album here, folks.
And I'll just say, I mean, I really liked it. Aside from that weird No Friend song, I think it's a really solid album. Rose Colored Boy, the second song, was like, fuck, this is my joint right now.
It's really good. It's so
catchy.
And then...
so catchy.
What's the other song that I
and
like?
And Caught in the Middle. Caught in the Middle is the other song where I was just like, fuck yeah.
I liked Fake Happy.
Yeah.
I liked the chorus of Fake Happy. I was like, damn, that sounds nice.
So it's got a very poppy, funky 80s vibe to it.
It really reminded me, and I didn't hear a lot of them, but just of Steel Drums. Like, I felt very Caribbean-y.
Without there really having that in there, except for Hard Times.
Yeah, just in...
But I know what you mean.
Yeah. It was almost like the guitars play what a steel drum would play on some songs.
And for all you curious people out there, I told Aaron that it sounds like the type of album where they wouldn't be out of place on tour with the band Fun.
Yeah.
Like, that bill would make sense.
But that's the sound. Yeah. That's the sound that's in right now.
Kudos to them. And if I may.
You may. Do it.
That album, this album will segue into another quick album review for a band that I have listened to since I was a wee lad.
Ooh.
Newfound Glory.
Ooh.
New, their ninth studio album.
What entitled, do the people, what would the people know Newfound Glory as?
A pop punk band.
But didn't they have like a really big song?
Maybe one of their biggest songs is My Friends Over You, Hit or Miss. Those are two huge singles. They tend to close the show with My Friends Over You. They've just, I mean, nine albums. They've been around for a hot minute. This is their ninth album. Like I said, Makes Me Sick is what it's called. Now, the reason why I think this segue, this little tie-in here, is because the guitar player, Chad, is the husband of Haley from Paramore. Right. Now, when I first, much, you know, like every other album these days, I first hear the singles, I tend to see the videos first when I'm perusing the YouTube, and the first single from this album was called Happy Being Miserable. And I thought the song was catchy. It reminded me of a song off of the, like an album that they put out like three albums ago, like the riff on the verse. I was like, okay, this is very Newfound Glory. The video's funny because it's a parody of Stand By Me, that pie eating scene when they're vomiting all over each other and telling the story by the campfire.
Mm-hmm.
Then they put out their second single called Party on Apocalypse. And I was like, oh, this is a little different, but it's still, I'm like, this is Newfound Glory. Still, it's just very, very catchy. They do catchy, right? Then the album comes out. First thing, I got a text from my brother that said, you hear that Newfound Glory album?
Oh no, oh no, what did the KBX say?
And I was like, no, not yet. And he was like, ooh, that's some poppy shit. And I was like, well, to be fair, you haven't been a Newfound Glory fan in a hot minute. So, you know. And he was like, true, LOL. I listened to the album. And I'm thinking, oh, I wonder why he said that. It's probably just very feel-good, upbeat pop punk songs, right?
Can I just say, at this point, I really don't know if he said that it is, because he likes Taylor Swift. He appreciates Taylor Swift, so he appreciates pop music. So I don't know if he's happy that it's it's like super poppy and it's just candy to his ears, or if he's pissed off.
Well, I think with my brother, he does like pop music like that, and he does like really heavy music, but it depends on the band. Like, if a band is known for a sound, he's not very forgiving if they veer from it into a style that they've never done before.
Hmm.
That's my theory. So I was like, okay, maybe it's just like really, really bright, poppy punk music, you know, like fuck, Summer of 2000 type of vibe or something.
Hmm.
I listened to it and from the first track, I was like, what the fuck am I listening to? Not as drastically choke a baby out like Thrice, but like, what is this fucking band? Like, the song, first song is called Your Jokes Aren't Funny. And I was like, okay,
oh.
I like the lyrics because he's just literally says your jokes aren't funny anymore to me and not the same person you used to be, that kind of thing. And I'm digging the lyrical vibe, but you know how an album is. They tend to come out the gate swinging. You know what I'm saying? First track is usually a barn burner, as they say. This was like kind of mid-tempo, like, okay, like something you might find in the middle of an album. And I was like, oh, is this setting a fucking example for the rest of this album?
It's always, it's not a good sign when you don't like the first song.
The first song did not do it for me. Then the second song was one of the singles, Party on Apocalypse. So I was like, oh, hey, oh, shit. And then we get to the third song, Call Me Antisocial. And I'm like, I relate to these lyrics. And again, though, musically, I was like, what is this? And then I'm thinking, okay, something's happening here. It's that old, the singles are not an indicator of the rest of the album. That's what's happening right now.
Where the singles, singles go, they go two ways. So you're saying the singles got you in. Because you heard.
They were more traditional Newfound Glory sounding. So it was almost like that was the bait. They caught me. They started reeling me in as I'm listening to the rest of the album. I'm like, and then I started flopping around. I'm like, you better fucking let me go.
Well, what are they doing? Are they then going to release one of these songs that you don't like and try to have that be like, this is what we're going to, you know, it's going to be big for us. This is going to be huge.
They've already released two singles off of a 10-track album. So, I mean, granted, they could do a Linkin Park and release every fucking song on the album as a single. But then we get to the track 4, Happy Being Miserable. And I'm like, oh, shit, it's that single again. Okay. Then, Aaron, I was hit by a fucking freight train on track 5.
In a good or bad way?
In a horrible way.
Freight trains hitting you would be horrible.
Yes. The song is called The Sound of Two Voices. Ooh. And it has steel drums like a motherfucker.
Steel drums?
I thought I was in an unofficial sequel to The Little Mermaid. I thought I was under the sea. It was like, it's the drums are like,
what?
It's like a fucking, I picture that little crab guy from Little Mermaid dancing and clacking his little claws together. It is so Calypso Caribbean. And then I started putting two and two together and I got 5, which was odd.
But a Radiohead song that I actually really like.
So I took one away and I got 4. And then I said, Chad is married to Haley. These two sleep together. They have conversations together. They play music together. Their influences are rubbing off onto one another.
She told him it was a good idea to have steel drums in this song.
And he was probably nervous. And he said, what's the most punk thing I can do is do something that's completely not punk. And I thought, holy shit, it's all making sense.
It's like the end of The Usual Suspects.
This album was blowing my mind in the worst possible way. I knew I thought I was in the fucking Twilight Zone when I heard Calypso fucking Caribbean steel drums on a Newfound Glory song. Holy shit. Then we get to Blurred Vision. And every album, Blurred Vision, Say It, Don't Spray It, probably has the most NFG sound guitar riff, but I'm being generous. Barbed Wire, Short and Sweet, The Cheapest Thrill. These are the song titles. Every song on there is mid-tempo. There's no fast songs, in my opinion. Almost every other song, if not every song, I could be, maybe 8 out of 10, have heavy keyboards and synth.
Who's the keyboardist in the band?
Nobody.
Ah.
It was the producer, Aaron Sprinkle.
Oh, well, yeah. He knows how to craft pop hits. So he basically asked your boys, y'all want to make some paper?
Yeah, they went to his ass. And Aaron Sprinkle's Listen, the guy's done a lot of good albums. I mean, he's worked with a lot of bands I like, even like Anne Berlin and Acceptance and Reliant K. And the guy has a fucking history. But I would listen, when all was said and done, I found myself in a police station. I was reporting an assault. Said, "Officer, something has happened to me. I'm physically ill. I've been attacked." And I told my friend Chris, because he was like, "Yo, how's that new Newfound Glory album?" I said, you don't want to know. You don't want to know. It was 34 minutes and 3 seconds of a big flaming question mark.
Wow.
It was something else. So here's what you want to know. That was my first impression.
Has it grown on you?
Let me tell you something. I've listened to that album. I've listened to this album like 20 fucking times. It has done something unexpected.
God. Oh, no. You fell for it. You fell for the steel drums.
It's such a great song.
Unbelievable, Jason. You walked right into their trap.
But it is the one new sinker. But it is the one Newfound Glory album that I cannot play in my car loudly because I feel like I would get dragged out of my car at a red light and somebody would attack me. Like, it's that kind of like, oof. But holy shit. Like, I've never done a 180 on an album so quickly because it didn't make sense to me. I was like, I don't dislike Newfound Glory ever. This is bizarre. It's not an album you can rock out to, no question. But if you want like some pop nuggets with some guitar in there and just catchy hooks and choruses that NFG is known for.
Have you ever danced to this album?
I don't dance, period, but I sway to this.
You never dance?
I was just like, ooh, fuck. Like some of the hooks on this. I was blown out. That being said, though, the last two songs, they're terrible. Short and Sweet and The Cheapest Thrill. I stand by that. Those two songs are shit. They're not even catchy. There's no good hooks in them. Even if they are mellow and not fast or punky, they're just not good. But anyway, I really turned around on it. I was shocked. That's my story with it. It's crazy. It's the most not Newfound Glory album ever. But I still managed to put it in my heart somewhere.
Wow.
Steel drums for the win.
Unbelievable. I'm disappointed.
Well, you wanted me to fucking burn it to the ground?
I did. Steel drums? In a Newfound Glory? Fuck. Who are you?
Yeah, but you should have saw... If you could see my face right after listening to it, you would have thought I'd been sodomized by someone. It would have been like, this dude has just been assaulted. Ooh. Like, it was that jarring to me that I was just like, what the actual fuck
man.
Am I listening to?
All right.
Now, let's talk TV real quick.
Okay.
I got a show for all of you ladies and germs. It's only had 2 episodes so far, but my God, am I taken with it? It is called American Gods. It is on Stars, the Stars Network. I mean, do you have Stars? Who the fuck knows? But what a show. Holy shit. If I may give the listeners a quick synopsis.
Yes, please. Please do.
Ex-convict Shadow Moon roams a world he doesn't understand, left adrift by the recent tragic death of his wife. Little does he know his life's about to change after he meets a crafty, charismatic con man named Mr. Wednesday, who offers Shadow a job as his bodyguard.
I'd be out right then. You're named after the worst day of the week. Get the fuck out of here.
As their journey begins, Shadow encounters a hidden America where magic is real and fear grows over the ascending power of new gods like technology and media. In a grand plan to combat the threat, Mr. Wednesday attempts to unite the old gods to defend their existence and rebuild the influence that they've lost, leaving Shadow struggling to accept this new world and his place in it. Fuck, I know that sounds bizarre, and it is. It is so bizarre. But the writing, whoo! Let me tell you, episode 2 starts with Orlando Jones,
what,
playing Mr. Nancy, giving a speech to a boat of African slaves on an African slave ship. He gives this speech that will blow your fucking mind. It's like the best monologue I've heard in God knows how long. The Shadow Moon is played by an actor named Ricky Whittle. I'm not sure who that is.
I don't either.
But he's pretty good. And he's an English fellow. He's from Oldham, England. And he was a model. He looks like a fucking model. No homo over here. But I recognize that this dude, he's exciting, folks. More importantly, Mr. Wednesday is played by the fantastic, the always fantastic Ian McShane.
Ooh.
Who, great. I could watch that guy sell newspapers. Just every line that comes out of his, I'm just like, okay, charm, check. Cunning, check. He's amazing. I mean, Crispin Glover.
Crispin Glover?
He plays Mr. World. He's crazy. He's the quintessential creepy guy. It's such a bizarre show. Oh, fuck. Gillian Anderson. Oh, what? Fuck. She plays media. I was like, okay, because Shadow Moon's walking through this department store and the TV starts talking to him. And it's Lucille Ball. And she's talking to him. And I was like, why does she look familiar? I was like, it's fucking Gillian Anderson playing Lucy. But really, she represents the god of media. It's fucking crazy. But what a show. Really. Kristen Chenoweth.
I put it down on my list. I just made a list of shows I gotta watch.
She plays Easter. I mean, Corbin Burnson. I mean, it's a great cast, but the cinematography is like, whoa. Some of the shots, you're just like, God, okay, let's sit on this for a minute. It's fucking violent, like super bloody and unapologetically over the top, like violent at times. But the dialogue, holy shit. I kid you not. Two thumbs up. Check it out. It's based off of a book by Neil Gaiman. And Neil Gaiman is quite the famous author, if people are unaware. He also did the Sandman comic book series. He did one of my favorite movies, Coraline.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he wrote Coraline.
Alright, I have it on my list. Right now, I put that, Better Call Saul, Fargo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm watching Scandal. They announced the next season's the last one. Good.
Okay. Yeah. We're like, I gotta slow this down.
The Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Modern Family. Veep. Silicon Valley.
Mm.
Am I missing anything?
I just want to say Designated Survivor is really good.
I'm not ready to commit to that.
Hashtag President Envy.
Well, that's anything. That's you could put a Campbell's soup thing on a desk and I would have President Envy.
Fucking Kiefer Sutherland, charming son of a bitch. President Tom Kirkland. I would proudly say that. real food review real quick.
Okay.
I had the Steak King from Burger King.
Okay.
Part of their King series. Remember they started off with the Big King? That big-ass double burger?
Yes.
Then they had the Bacon King, which looked like it had a fucking small squeal and honking of a pig like laying on top of your burger. Mm-hmm. And now they have the Steak King, which is two patties, cheese, a couple slabs of bacon, and steak sauce. And those little crispy onion petals.
I like those.
My review is, it was very, very tasty. It's not A1 officially licensed steak sauce, and you can tell. You're like, oh, this tastes like a steak sauce, but it ain't that distinct A1 tang.
Oh, I love A1.
Yeah. But I guess they didn't get the license for that, but they were just like, you know what? A steak sauce burger would be tasty, and they were fucking right. Burger King, I am a big fan of your King series of burgers. That is all. Yummy.
Continue.
Also got two new flavors of Oreo cookies.
Man. I was told about this by listener Donis out there.
Mm. Said, Donis, thank you.
Check out these Oreo cookies. Tell them what the one is. It eludes me.
So our listener let you know, and then you let me know. And then they were obtained by this guy. Two new Oreo cookies, but the one in question we're talking about are the waffles and syrup flavor.
How could it not be delightful?
Let that sink in, people. I love this. Whoever's in charge of Oreo right now, I love where their head's at. They have taken the reins, much like the Hostess company, and they're like, you know what makes a company boring? Not giving people variety, not changing things up, not giving them exciting new flavors. Thank you.
But then there's a lot of people that you hear because they haven't tried it, and they're just like, stay in your lane, Oreo.
But guess what? Nobody's touching the ones that you love dearly. You still want that plain original Oreo? It ain't going anywhere. That's the greatest part. Now, the Oreo waffles and syrup. My quick review is this. It's obviously on the golden Oreo cookie. You'll smell it. The minute you pull back that layer, you do smell waffles and syrup. It's fantastic. Mm. You're like, shit. It's got that cream in the middle that has the big white ring of cream, but then you got that smaller dark brown ring or light brown ring of like syrup flavor inside that cream. Here's what I thought, yep, food scientist, you've gone and nailed this flavor. Job well done. Tastes like waffles. You get that syrupy taste and just that overall smell and the whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. That being said, it is not going to be on my short list of go-to Oreo flavors. It's tasty, and it's definitely worth a try because they've nailed it. But it's not a flavor that I see myself continually wanting to snack on.
Is it too sweet? Is it too sweet?
I mean, as sweet as any other Oreo, quite frankly. There's just something about that taste. And you'll know it when you taste it. I mean, you're either going to love it or you're just going to be like, yeah, it's okay. I just don't think it's a go-to. There's only two flavors of Oreo that are go-to for me. That is original Oreo and cinnamon bun Oreo. Mm. Those two, I'll fuck with either of those. I'll buy a pack of either and I'm good. But this is like fun to try, but I don't know if I'd ever get it again. Then you have Fireworks Oreos.
What are those?
They are regular Oreos with Pop Rocks candy infused into the cream so that it pops in your mouth while you're licking around the cream and stuff. And again, it tastes exactly like a regular Oreo, but it's got this fun little novelty aspect of it, and that's about it. I mean, it's just fun to try. I'm sure kids would love the Pop Rocks candy in it. It doesn't really affect the flavor of the cookie.
Do you really feel it, though? Do you feel the pop?
I actually did, yeah. I was like, wow, I can actually feel him exploding. It was kind of fun, but I don't know what it was. The first cookie that I took out of that package, I don't know if it's because I haven't had Oreo in a minute, but it was fucking delicious. I was like, what did they put in this firework cookie?
That's Oreo, because it was, man, like
the best Oreo I've had in forever. Anyway, it's a fun little gimmick, and, you know, that's about all it is. So, again, though, kudos to the Oreo company for just doing it. Whew. Oh, and we can talk about this movie. Final thing we'll talk about tonight.
Okay.
I watched Get Out.
Get Out!
Get Out! Exactly. For people that don't know, quick synopsis. Now that Chris and his girlfriend Rose have reached the meet the parents milestone of dating, she invites him for a weekend getaway upstate with Missy and Dean. At first, Chris reads the family's overly accommodating behavior as nervous attempts to deal with their... Okay, this is a typo. I apologize. It's making me look stupid. All right, let's just sum it up.
That sounds like more than a typo. That sounds like horrible syntax. A syntax error.
It threw me off completely. So basically, he's a brother. His girlfriend is a honky. Her name's Rose. They're a couple, yada, yada. She's like, yo, let's go to meet my parents upstate. And he's like, all right, cool. And he's, you know, nervous as any dude is meeting the parents for the first time. And, you know, he's a little more nervous because they don't know that he's black. And, yeah, he's like, you didn't tell him? And she's like, no, of course. And he's like, you naive bitch. Anyway, so they go. The parents are very nice. Everything seems really friendly. Then he starts noticing that, you know, the help, they're the only black people around. He's like, okay, I see.
But they told him that they weren't racist. The parents told him they weren't racist because they voted for Obama twice.
I would have voted for a third term if I could have.
Yeah, so obviously.
He's like, you know, he's just dealing with it as anybody would, I guess, in that situation. It's kind of, let's face it, it's an awkward situation, and there's this underlying kind of weirdness with, he's, you know, I'm sure in the back of his head he's like, do they really care if I'm black or not? And they're not going to come out and say that. So there's a little bit of this underlying tension and just kind of general awkwardness that comes with meeting the folks for the first time. And then, oopsie daisy, she forgets that there's a fucking like family reunion going on the same weekend, conveniently. And he's like, are you fucking kidding me? So now he's like surrounded by, it's just him and a ton of like really wealthy yuppity honkies, you know. And how do we explain how it goes from here? It gets weird because the only other black people, like I said, is like the housekeeper lady and the groundskeeper guy. And their behavior is very odd.
Yeah, they don't exactly speak, they just don't speak, so that makes them very weird.
They kind of just stare and give you these weird grins. And you're like, okay. And, I mean, it's noticeable to the point where Chris notices it, and he's just like, they're fucking weird. His buddy, who works for the TSA, and is quite frankly hilarious. I want to say, what's his name? Rod? I think it's Rod.
I forget.
Rod. Okay. Rod works for the TSA. He's Chris's friend, and he's aware that Chris went away for the weekend to Rose's parents' house. So, you know, from the minute you know that he knows, you're like, he's going to be your only hope. And how do we explain? Do we want to be like spoiler heavily? I mean, we always spoil shit for people, so I guess it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, but but this hasn't really been out for that long.
Yeah. Let's just say that he does meet a couple of more black people in the party. But again, or just one other guy, actually.
Yeah.
And it's somebody that he knows from his childhood, and he's acting nothing like he acted before. It's like a completely different person, and he doesn't recognize him, and it's like the invasion of the body snatchers. That's what it feels like, mm-hmm. right? Like somebody did something to this guy, and Chris knows that something wrong is going on in this place, and people are overly friendly, but it's to the point that it's weird.
Yeah, and it's just that weird, uncomfortable thing when everyone is super overly friendly, and they have that weird smile.
Like, yeah, it starts to slide into disingenuous, or something is just beneath the surface. And, you know, I'm tiptoeing with my words here, because if you haven't seen it, I think and like Aaron's saying, it's still a fairly recent movie. It's directed and written and produced by Jordan Peele of Keenan and Peele fame, best known for his comedic work. It is his directorial debut. I mean, I don't know much about Keenan and Peele. I've only seen like a few clips. Hilarious guys. Wow. Like, just as a fan of thrillers and kind of horror, this isn't horror in the Friday the 13th sense, but it's horror in the tense thriller sense. Like, there are horror elements to it, right?
Like, it's a suspense. It's kind of like in Twilight Zone or Outer Limits.
Yeah. That I hesitate to call it horror, but I see that a lot of people have categorized it that way.
I don't think it's horror because I watched it.
Exactly. Just from not even taking into account who made it, who wrote it, doesn't matter. It's just a really good thriller. It does its job of keeping you on the edge of your seat and wanting to know what happens next. That's what a good thriller does, right? You're just kind of like clamoring for the next part. You're just like, oh god, what the fuck's gonna happen? What's gonna happen? What's gonna happen? And you're just tense the whole time. And I think it does a really, really great job at that.
Yeah, there isn't too much of that. Well, he should just, well, you know, like it's well thought out and well executed. So it doesn't seem like, oh, okay, well, he should have just done this and this and this. Or there's a lot of dumb stuff in it.
Right, Chris's behavior in the movie is very, I don't want to say realistic because I've never been in that situation, but it makes sense.
Yeah,
it's just well thought out. Yes,
and it's like it's just interesting. It's just not something that you usually see.
No, it's a really kind of, it's a very unique plot in my opinion, and the execution's done really well. There is an obvious racial element to it that I think is handled really well. It's not in this over-the-top finger-pointing type of way where like one side is necessarily made to look villain-like, even though it is technically. It's hard to explain, but the nuances of the tension between races is handled really well. And what feels to me, to be very honest, does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think like in my head that made sense. So again, I mean, Jordan Peele, the guy that directed it, wow. Like, he must have just had this fucking vision of how he wanted this to go down, and he just handled it like a boss.
Yeah. Well, they're big fans of movies and stuff, so they know what they're doing movie-wise. And
I mean, it's great. And there is comedy in it, mostly provided by his friend, Rod. Yeah,
his friend's funny.
His friend's super funny. And he has a lot of dialogue that plays on, I guess, white chick tropes in movies like this. that are just spot on, and they're fucking hilarious. And again, spoiler free. We'll keep it spoiler free this time. But if you have not seen this movie, I highly recommend it for
sure.
There you
go. I liked it. I was like, well done.
Yeah, really good. I was surprised, quite frankly, by how much I liked it, because it was getting so much universal acclaim. And I always get weary when that kind of stuff happens, because I tend to not like the majority stuff that gets praised. I always feel like this is overhyped, or this is, and that does happen to me a lot. I do watch the stuff and I'm just like, yeah, I don't get it. This isn't for me. But this is one of those few exceptions where I'm like, I get what all the praise is about. So, yeah. Boom. Cha-cha-cha. And that was a plug, because we're wrapping it up.
Nice.
Woo. How about that, folks? Content, baby. Anyway, you know where to find us, don't you? I'm asking you all. I know you know the answer to this. MonsterAndWine@gmail.com, mnw.podbean.com. I'm sure we're on the iTunes store. I don't use Apple, but I'm sure we're there. And chachachatv.com. And Aaron, do you have anything to say to these people besides arrivederci?
Oh, no. Just have a good week, people.
Yes.
Arrivederci.